A bird's eye view of Edinburgh, lit up at night. Then clubbers under the lights on a packed dance floor. Pint in hand, a young man grins, chatting with a friend.
I love the feeling that I'm surrounded by faces that I love. Just mindlessly dancing with my friends. Just kind of enjoying the emotional connections to the people around me. But I'm totally convinced that in 10 years' time, I will slowly lose those connections.
The image of happy clubbers becomes smaller.
Like a television going to static.
Then it fades into darkness. For generations, a mutant gene's been passing through John Jennings' family. Sunlight filtering through treetops.
The possibility that we might have the mutation, it's affecting everything in my family. It's pushed everything else out.
It means John and his sister Emily have a 50-50 chance of getting Alzheimer's early in life.
There's always a question about, do I have it, do I not have it? It's such a big thing that I have to live with every day. If I found out I had it tomorrow, because there's not a cure out there, what would I do?
The Jennings family is now on the front line of the fight against the disease. John undergoes a brain scan.
I'm not just going to sit around and wait to get sick. My situation means that I can help end this disease.
For the first time ever, a major trial has shown that a drug can slow the decline of the brain in Alzheimer's.
Shown for the first time that the progression of early stage Alzheimer's can be slowed down.
We are closer than ever to a treatment.
This may be a defining moment in the field of Alzheimer's research.
Scientists believe it could herald a new era of treatment.
And it all started with one woman, John and Emily's mother, Carol Jennings. Home video footage shows her playing with them as children, on a slide and with a ball.
Mum had her eye on the future all the time. She wanted science to find a solution to Alzheimer's disease.
She's a trailblazer. Carol has literally changed the course of research globally.
We used to joke that she would give a limb for the research. Luckily, we didn't have to take one.
This is the story of one British family.
I've always believed that we should make the most of every day.
Who changed the course of medical history and could hold the key to a cure for Alzheimer's. At the beach with her family on a sunny day, Carol looks out to sea.
If I die tomorrow, I've had a wonderful life. I mean, okay, it might be a bit shorter than I'd hoped for, but it's a risky business living, isn't it?
The Jennings versus Alzheimer's. Coventry, gliding over the tiled rooftops and lawned gardens of terraced and semi-detached homes, then a car parked on the drive outside a modern red brick house. Inside, Carol's lying on a bed in a downstairs room, and her husband Stuart's emptying the dishwasher when John, Emily and family arrive.
Come on in, everyone. Yeah? She's had a hard morning.
Oh.
Who's come to see you, Carol?
She looks like
hey, morning.
Mum.
Can you reach to give a kiss? Oh, you have time on the bed. It's a long way away, is she?
Hello.
John kisses his mum.
Oh, she's
that microphone.
My son John and his husband Matt have flown down from Edinburgh. John hasn't seen her for quite a while. She's been seeing a bit more of Emily. She's been coming over with Mark and with Eleanor to sit with her mum, which is great. Says all sorts of things.
It's been kind of 10 years from the point she was diagnosed, and it's been a long 10 years. Fully bedridden for probably 4 or 5 now.
A wooden cross on a shelf, a ticking clock and framed family photos.
Yeah. Mum has genetic Alzheimer's disease. A type of Alzheimer's disease that's caused by a gene mutation in our family. My sister, Emily, and I live with a 50% chance that we've also inherited the gene mutation. If Emily were to have the mutation, she has a daughter, Eleanor, who might have inherited the gene as well.
John laughs, watching Matt and Mark swinging a rope, while Eleanor skips.
Hello. Can I sit next to you if that's all right?
John sits beside Carol's hospital-style bed, and Eleanor joins them.
She's got some moisturising cream on her hands. Can you feel it?
Yeah.
Keeping her skin soft.
Eleanor strokes Carol's shoulder.
She's probably dreaming or something, like...
Maybe. What do you think she's dreaming about?
Herself.
Maybe.
Maybe when she was a bit younger, like that. Like
that?
Pictures.
A recording of Carol singing, age 13.
I drove along the road to love. The sun was high in the sky above. I drove along love's great highway. At last it was my wedding day.
Carol speaking in 1993.
I've had a very happy life, terrific childhood. Happy marriage, wonderful children.
Photos show Carol at the seaside as a little girl, in Stuart's arms on their wedding day, then laughing and playing with John and Emily when they were young.
It started really in 1982. My father was diagnosed as having Alzheimer's disease. He was only sort of 58 when he had the first symptoms. He started to forget things, the date and very recent things that had happened. And his behaviour seemed, well, slightly strange. My mother went to the doctor and they in fact said, well, this is Alzheimer's disease. There was nothing they could do, there was no cure, and Mum had to sort of go home and do the best she could. And then in 1983, my aunt, his sister, was diagnosed. And then the following year, my uncle.
I started to think, gosh, you know, this is three people in one family. It seems that this is just more than a coincidence. There must be something more to this.
Professor Sir John Hardy waters his plants.
And I was sure there must be somebody somewhere who would be interested.
I've told you your nickname is Scruffy Professor. Are you happy with that nickname?
let me just say my mother is not happy with that nickname.
You're exactly what I want a professor to be. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you very much.
Professor John Hardy from University College London.
I'd always wanted to work on the brain. I mean, the brain is who we are. But the more we know, the more we realise we have only scratched the surface. There's so much we don't understand. In 1987, I was at St Mary's Hospital Medical School in West London. Nobody knew the causes of Alzheimer's disease. It was just seen as an inevitable consequence of ageing. It was not genetic. So when we started to work on the genetics of Alzheimer's disease, it was a radical thing to think. We wrote in the Alzheimer's Society newsletter and asked people if they had Alzheimer's disease in their family, if they had more than one case, could they write to us? And the letters immediately started to come in.
A handwritten letter.
When the letters came in, I numbered them, and so Carol Jennings' family in our lab books was always called Family 23. I've scribbled 23 in the top left-hand corner. That takes me back.
Dear sir, I was very interested to read of your research in the Alzheimer's Disease Society news and think my family could be of use. I am the daughter of Walter Bexon, who you'll see from the family tree is 63 years old and has Alzheimer's disease, as does his sister Audrey. His brother Arthur also may have the disease. Please contact me at the above address if you think we could be of help. Yours faithfully, Carol Jennings.
It was immediately obvious that this was an important family. Carol had drawn her family tree, so we could see there were six affected living individuals, and they had all developed the disease in their mid-50s. I thought we could use a family like the Jennings family to really identify the genetics of Alzheimer's disease.
The Living Dead, BBC 1988.
We don't really know what causes Alzheimer's disease. This is brain tissue, and some of it has disappeared. And this is shown by the increase in the size of the hollow spaces within the centre of the brain, much larger in the Alzheimer's patient than the normal patient.
Anybody looking at an Alzheimer brain could see that it's lost a third of its weight. Why? What has caused it to lose all of that tissue? Under a microscope, we can see plaques made up of a protein called amyloid. These are tiny pinpricks scattered through the brain. Obviously, brain cells were dying, and we could see all this amyloid, and this was a real conundrum for us. Which came first, the amyloid or the disease? That was the mystery which we had to solve.
A cure must be found for Alzheimer's disease because the alternatives are too alarming to consider.
Other groups started working on the disease as well.
What about this one? Can you tell me the name of it?
Oh, that's a terrific thing.
Begins with an R. Sounds like ruh.
Ronica, I can almost get it, but I can't quite get it.
Rhinoceros?
Rhinoceros, right. That's it. Yeah, that's I've got a big thing that's sticking out.
There was a group in Boston, there was a group in Seattle, and a group in Belgium. It was a fevered atmosphere. It was a race to find the gene. We were the underdogs. We had much less money. So we decided to focus all of our efforts on Family 23.
The team discovered more of our family and cousins and people, and they gradually took more and more blood samples. In fact, it ended up with 44 members of the family giving blood.
The whole process of genetics is narrowing it down. So we can take blood samples, isolate DNA from the blood samples, and find out which bits of the DNA the affected family members shared. It took almost 4 years of research. But we made a breakthrough November 20th, 1990. Firstly, we identified the amyloid gene. And then we sequenced the amyloid gene, and we discovered there was a mutation that was inherited by all the affected family members, but not by their unaffected brothers and sisters and cousins.
Researchers at work.
We'd done it. We knew that the disease started with amyloid. And so if it starts with amyloid in one family, the simplest hypothesis is that amyloid is how it starts always. I remember going home to my wife then and saying, you know, we found something today that is going to change Alzheimer's research and change our lives. That was a great day.
Now we've found families with a change in the structure of the amyloid, they get the disease. We can be sure that that amyloid protein is the cause of the disease.
Scientists believe they've made the most important discovery so far in the fight against Alzheimer's disease.
Scientists have isolated a chemical compound or protein in the brain called amyloid. It's present in everyone's brain after you reach your mid-40s. But in Alzheimer's sufferers, this protein has mutated, so too much of it is being produced.
A family from the East Midlands may have helped scientists make a medical breakthrough.
Carol Jennings knows a lot about Alzheimer's disease.
My father, when he was diagnosed, was only 59. My aunt was only 54. One in five people over 80 get Alzheimer's disease. They will hopefully come up with something that will prevent it happening.
I really thought that we'd have treatments within 5 years. That's what I thought. And, well, that obviously wasn't right.
30 years later, 2023. Across the world, Every major scientific institution is now involved in the search for an Alzheimer's treatment. The Dementia Research Centre at UCL in London is studying those with a genetic form of the disease. Dr. Kath Mummery, Head of Clinical Trials, Dementia Research Centre, UCLH.
We've been trying to find treatments for Alzheimer's disease for 20 plus years. We haven't had a positive result. The brain's an unbelievably complex organ, which I like knotty problems.
The work that Carol and John Hardy did, discovering that first gene, changed everything. It gave us something solid showing that we needed to focus on amyloid.
Catherine, hi. Do you want to come in? Come in, come in.
The stakes are really high. There are over 900,000 people in the UK with Alzheimer's disease right now. If we don't find a treatment, we are going to be in a society that cannot cope with that burden.
How are you?
I'm okay, most of the time.
Mm-hmm. So just close your eyes. Mm-hmm. And which hand am I touching now?
That's the right.
Okay, and close your eyes. Which hand am I touching now?
Way over here.
Okay, and what's that one called?
That's the thumb.
Okay, your brain isn't telling you this arm's here at the moment. Right. It's forgotten about it a bit.
All the trials at the beginning were in sporadic form of Alzheimer's disease, so the common one that we all think of in people that are older. We have watched as many drugs failed, and so that's where the idea came of looking at people who had genetic forms of Alzheimer's disease.
John's brain scan images.
Because they're in their 30s and 40s when they start to get symptoms, so they have a very pure form of disease. In other words, they don't have all of the changes that other people as they get older have in their brains in addition to this type of disease. You know exactly when they're going to get symptoms. You know the course of the disease. The age of onset of that disease is very similar across generations. So if your mum has a genetic form of Alzheimer's disease and she started developing symptoms age 42, you are very likely to develop symptoms on or around the age of 42. So working with people with genetic forms of Alzheimer's disease, like Carol and like John Jennings, is incredibly useful.
The golden glow of the setting sun reflects off the shimmering water beside them as John and his husband go for a walk, passing boats resting on their moorings. Later, they sit down together on a bench, Matt with his arm around John.
Now we know that Mum has the disease, so obviously has the gene. I know for certain that I'm at 50-50 risk. It is possible to have a test, but I haven't had the test yet, so I don't know what my gene status is.
John looks out over the water towards rugged hills lining the distant horizon.
Mum started becoming symptomatic at 50. I'm 38, so I could start developing symptoms in 10 years. I try to be positive for the most part. I'm really lucky to have Matt, my husband. Like, I've lived a whole life, really, in the time that we've been together. People sometimes say building memories, which, if someone at risk of Alzheimer's disease, leaves a bit of a bitter taste in my mouth sometimes talking about that.
This is actually the day we got married, in 2012. It was kind of whirlwind because, like, I came to Scotland to study, met John in January 2012, and got married in October 2012.
This is cute as well.
We went on a walk up Lion's Head in Cape Town. Well, this is like my family. The first Christmas we went down to Cape Town together. And then next to that, it's Carol's 60th. Was it a surprise?
Yes,
yeah. Yeah, it was a surprise. So, yeah,
that's... I think we've got videos of Mum being surprised, actually.
Happy birthday to you.
Emily reaches out a hand, urging caution, as Carol stands smiling beside her cake, holding a knife.
I remember because I hadn't seen John's mum for a while. I don't think it could have been that long, maybe a few months, but the decline in that period was just so dramatic and I got really upset. Just makes you think, if he does have the gene, there is limited time.
turmeric. TMG apparently helps reduce inflammation. This one's nicotinamide riboside, which is actually really expensive, so I take that every other day, which probably means that I'm massively negating any possible positive effect that it's going to have. Oh, and this one as well, berberine, I take that every other day. Like, all of them have got some effect on people with sporadic Alzheimer's, so I'm just sort of trusting that maybe they'll delay things slightly. At the moment, I kind of overthink everything that could be a symptom of my brain changing. Like, Matt sometimes gets annoyed because he always just jumps to the conclusion that it's that.
When I have tea, I do.
Which is exactly what Dad used to say to Mum as well.
And you think about how Carol must have been feeling when she was noticing her decline. And so John, having seen this with his mum and having to consider that for himself as a possibility, and then me actually seeing it, you know, manifest itself as well, it makes it feel very real. I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of thinking he has the gene and all the implications for that. Well, I'm still hoping he doesn't. Because the thing that makes John John is, like, how his interests and the way he interacts with people and talking about anything and everything and being passionate about it. And so the possibility that he couldn't be that person is difficult.
I love knowing absolutely everything that's happening. I almost even take a sort of morbid curiosity in what might be happening in my brain right now. I really want to know. I want to understand it.
John takes a train.
For 6 or 7 years now. I've volunteered to be involved in research at the Dementia Research Centre in London. Sort of signed up to begin with just to be involved, just to continue kind of the legacy of the family. Mum had her eye on the future all the time. She wanted science to find a solution to Alzheimer's disease.
From the train speeding through a patchwork of tree-lined fields to footage of Carol and Stuart in church from 1992, while he takes a seat wearing a priest's collar and robes, she steps up to the lectern in a white summer dress. She smiles.
And now let us come before God in prayer. Let us pray.
After we found the mutation and that it must be the amyloid genes which caused the disease, we needed to tell Family 23 because I knew that we could test the next generation and the people who were currently unaffected and tell them whether or not they were going to get the disease. We arranged a family conference with Carol and all the other family members.
A letter about the conference.
I was nervous, very nervous about the meeting, because I got quite friendly with Carol. She's almost exactly the same age as me. Just a nice, kind, warm person.
We were told that there was a possibility of genetic testing. And at that point, she had to wrestle with the idea that she might have the gene.
Footage of the family together.
Carol's response initially was, will it make a difference to how you research? And they said, not at this stage, because obviously it's the generation before that are still with us, we're dealing with at the moment. But it might help you to make plans.
With me is Carol Jennings.
Now, there is a test which you could take which would tell you definitely whether you would or would not get it, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Are you going to take that test?
Well, for the moment, no, I've decided that I won't.
Told me there was some form of treatment, either to slow it down or cure it. What's the point in knowing?
It isn't fear that's motivated Carol's decision. It's a determination not to let her life or her family's be ruled by this tragic inheritance.
I just don't see the benefits in knowing. I don't see what difference it's going to make. I can live my life quite happily with the doubt, if you like, that I may get it. I've got to die of something. We all have. So, you know, why know? Why not just take it when it happens? I think a lot of it is to do with the quality of your life. I mean, okay, it might be a bit shorter than I'd hoped for, but it's a risky business living, isn't it?
Carol smiles and waves in video footage, walking through a sunlit city square. Then she's sitting in a wheelchair at home, her dark brown hair now shorter and grey. Professor Nick Fox, Director, Dementia Research Centre, UCL.
Carol, in a way, is the reason I ended up in research at all. The first gene had been found in 1991, and I started in 93. It was a nihilism, there's no point making a diagnosis because just give people bad news and there's nothing you can do anyway, that the brain was a really inaccessible, complex organ.
An article from 1996.
My research was doing brain imaging using MRI scans that look at the structure of the brain. I realised that in familial Alzheimer's disease, you could follow people who were completely well and study them and assess them and do brain scans, knowing that if they develop this disease, you could get an insight into the earliest changes that you could never do with typical late-onset Alzheimer's disease. And so I relied upon people like Carol to volunteer to come along and have a brain scan when they were well. And so she had brain scans every year, and that was part of the research, so obviously that wasn't shared with her, and she didn't actually ask about whether it showed anything on it. She was very clear that she wanted to do everything possible, but she didn't want to have to be told her genetic status, and she'd prefer to live with the hope that maybe she's fine.
So, do you know what's happening this morning?
I've got a vague idea.
Yeah, so
I'm not sure the order of things, but...
Okay, well, we've got the MRI at 9 o'clock. We've just got to do the checklist when we're down there.
So this is our scanner. I'll need you to lay down in here.
At the time when Mum was no longer able to have MRI scans, that's about the same time that I started having mine. It is giving my life some purpose to think that I'm contributing to it.
Images of John's brain, then Professor Nick, greeting him with a handshake.
John.
Hello.
How nice to see you.
And you, how's it going?
I'm all right. It must feel a bit like a second home to you by now.
A little, yeah, I'm like a homing pigeon. I have the opportunity now to go and see Mum's brain scans.
This is a coronal slice. There's a scalp. This is somebody looking at you. And this is a scan from 1995. Very healthy brain, packed tightly within the skull.
Yeah.
There's just no space at all. So that's her first scan, and that's 1995.
So she's 40 or 41 then?
Absolutely. That's 95, there's 96, and they're both absolutely normal. There may be some change there, but it's super subtle.
Mm-hmm.
That's just normal aging. And now this is 2002, 2003, 6, 7, and so on. And only because you can compare it to an earlier one, do you start saying, well, look, there might be a little bit more space there.
Yeah, yeah. Probably that's the latest one where we thought potentially it could just be something else, but we were raising concerns in the hope that it wasn't.
And now if we just move on 2010 all the way through to 2016, can you see these spaces opening up? The black areas?
Yeah. These black areas, is that just space? Is that just
fluid? That's fluid.
Cerebrospinal fluid.
That's replaced where there was brain tissue.
I mean, this is a huge amount of...
It's devastated.
Yeah.
And that's
2016.
That's 2016.
Between maybe this scan and this scan, we started raising concerns about the way that she was behaving, not remembering things, not wanting to engage so much, not initiating conversations, and that sort of thing.
And this kind of explains it a bit, doesn't it?
This is the year that I got married.
John takes a moment, resting his chin on his hand, as he views his mother's brain scans.
Now if we show you that whole series, so you can see the change.
Moving forward on a timeline from 1996 to 2016, the changing scans show the pale areas of brain matter contracting and the dark patches of liquid getting larger.
And that's what the disease does. It's devastating all the cognitive functions, calculation, language, visuospatial, planning skills that make us what we are as a thinking human, mm-hmm. all being affected.
2016. By 2016, I felt like we basically lost her. A lot of her behaviour was totally gone. And there it is.
The final images in the series on Professor Nick's computer screen show large dark areas in the centre of the brain and more around the perimeter near the skull, resembling coves and inlets along a coastline.
I knew that was damage. There's lots of things that can damage your brain. People can have a stroke if they're at the same age that Mum was when she started getting ill and, like, fully recover. Your brain can rewire itself and people can relearn skills, regain their personality. It's almost not the damage that's a problem for Alzheimer's, it's the fact that there's no way for it to rewire because it's progressive. And you can't help but think, maybe it's already happening for me.
At home, Carol sits with her eyes closed, her lips moving wordlessly. Then carers come into the room and reverse her wheelchair before carefully transferring her to the bed using a hydraulic lift. Stuart.
The journey changes.
Come on then, Carol, we're going back.
When the journey began, it was a journey from the discovery of a gene through diagnosis.
Carol, we're going up.
It was about Carol as somebody who was in the early stages and she could speak with that.
Got a lecture?
Yeah.
The journey's different now, you know, we're at the end stages, we're, you know, we're in the final part of the journey.
Down we go, Carol.
Carol has fought her battle. Our first priority is to care for her now.
So we're nearly there. Right.
Get your head up.
A cross made of glass sits on the nearby windowsill and cards adorn the mantelpiece above the fireplace, along with a carriage clock and two Siamese cat figurines.
Put some headphones on, darling. Okay, play some music then. There we go. She responds well to music. She loved Take That, and I introduced her to Meatloaf. She has a real eclectic taste. John Denver, The Carpenters. She hardly speaks, but she'll mouth the words if it's a song she likes and knows. Probably this is one of the cruelest parts, because when she was well, she was a woman who was very articulate. She was a public speaker.
Carol giving a presentation.
My name is Carol Jennings. I work for the Alzheimer's Disease Society. My job title is coordinator for younger people with dementia.
Carol, if I may start with you, when did you first discover that your father had Alzheimer's disease?
Well, it was diagnosed in 1982. And he was a real extrovert and he was always making you laugh. Hello. And I have memories of him throwing open the curtains and saying, "Good morning, world, you know, isn't it bright and breezy?" Oh, and you know, sometimes you sort of, "Oh, Dad, you know." My father was ill for 12 years. They were not 12 years of stability, but rather of never knowing what each day would bring. But always knowing that nothing would ever be the same, but would only deteriorate. At first it starts insidiously. There are the lapses of short-term memory, the slight disorientation. Dementia creeps up, shakes the normality we rely on in life, and then takes it by storm so that nothing seems normal again. For us, it was a case of not looking too far ahead, taking a day at a time, not daring to look at what might occur.
Carol, writing in 1997, a voice recreated using AI.
My daughter was born just before my father was diagnosed, and it always seemed that as she was learning things, my father was unlearning them.
Stuart greets Emily and family.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Eleanor.
So how's Gang Gang then?
She's a bit wet, Gang.
How are you?
Stuart picks up Eleanor while Emily goes to see Carol.
Hi. Eleanor's bought a game for you.
Mum was diagnosed in her 50s.
Are you okay?
I remember that they wrote her a letter to say that she had symptoms. Mum would read it and she'd cry, and then she'd leave it on the side, and then she'd find it again and cry. And I said to Dad, bin the blooming letter. Like, why, if she keeps forgetting it and then reading it again, like, what is that doing?
Hello, new one.
And that period, those few months where she realised that she had it and what was going to happen were the scariest. She was the most upset and it was horrible. And I remember she had to have a test or something in London and she was upstairs on the bed crying. And I went up and lay next to her and gave her a cuddle. And I said to her, you know, are you okay? And she said, I'm just scared. I just got to go to London and have this test and they're going to do all these scans of my brain and what are they going to find? And so I was saying they're probably just going to find a pea and that, like, you've just got a pea brain and, you know, who knows? And just to make her laugh, because that's how I deal with things. So the only thing I could do was be saying, making light of it as much as it was, and that whatever we find, it will be fine.
Eleanor gives Carol a cheery wave.
But she knew what was going to happen next.
From Eleanor sitting in her wheelchair to pacing beside a bookshelf in 2016.
I think it's really difficult to be able to separate out the before and the after she started getting ill, because it's so gradual.
You going to sit down, Mum?
I guess my earliest memory is probably like her ironing in the living room. And me just sitting there watching daytime TV. She stopped working for a little while when she had kids because she was teaching before then. Like, totally threw herself into looking after us. So every time that I see Mum now, it's affecting, it's changing the memories that I have. I think a lot of my memories of Mum when she was totally well are distorted.
In the loft, John finds an article entitled Family Key May Unlock the Cure.
Well, she says this gives drug companies 20 years to find a cure. 20 years? What year was this? 1991? Well, that'll be 31 years. It's marvellous, said Mrs. Jennings, 36. While it may not help me, I hope it will help my children.
Another article on the front of the Nottingham Herald and Post features a photo of Carol with the children under the headline, Shadow of Fear. Next, John looks through some old photos.
This looks like his mum in California, living the dream. Mum went to California in the 70s before she got married. I mean, it was quite a big deal. Must have been amazing, actually. She was always pretty strong-willed.
In another box, John finds a file labelled Carol's Family History.
Well, these are the handwritten drafts of the creative writing she did about the day that Grandad died.
John reads by torchlight.
It's so much more personal than her handwriting.
Flicking through Carol's writing, John heaves a sigh and blinks. Then he reads aloud, his eyes shining.
Dementia gradually takes away everything that was the person, the judgment, the reason, the personality, the faculties bit by bit, piece by piece. And I said, now he's whole again, and I believed it. Now he was free, now he had control again. He'd been caged in a body and mind that were keeping him a prisoner. Now he was released. The sun was shining.
In home video footage, Carol opens a window, revealing a sunny city street stretching away below. John smiles tearfully, reading his mum's handwritten memories.
It's so personal for Mum, like she couldn't bear the thought of losing control.
Putting the writing back in its plastic folder, John turns to a cardboard box full of photographs and finds one of himself as a young man with his mum.
Mum got very isolated when she started getting ill. I guess my biggest fear is losing those connections to the people around me, because I've got people who care about me a lot. But if you don't feel it, don't remember, you are alone in a scary place. I think that's the thing that I'm scared of. Being alone in a scary place.
From John standing alone in the dark to laughing and chatting over drinks with Matt and their friends.
I have to decide whether to have the test to know whether I've inherited the mutation or not. It's the most difficult decision in my life.
He stands on a sandy beach as distant lights punctuate the night like stars. Then it's daytime, and John's with Emily and Eleanor in a children's playground.
Uh-huh. There we go. That's exactly how you do it.
Okay. We're just so different, me and John. John was always the one who would do the research and do lots of good stuff about it, and I've just been pretty much in denial and don't really talk about it. I think as I've got older and I've had Eleanor, there's even more to think about, because it has a knock-on impact on her. If I'm getting it, she has a 50-50 chance of getting it. And I don't want it in her life. That, you know, that's had an impact on my life all the way through. So I don't want her thinking about it, I suppose.
You're actually getting quite heavy.
Look for me.
Yeah? Oh, Google eyes. Yeah, you and John can make the icing.
Mum started getting ill when she was 50, which was in 2004. Like, late 40s seemed like quite a long time away in the past, and now it's like...
It's weird, like, I don't know if you find this, but I feel like I don't worry about anything else other than that.
No, I don't. So I'm either going to die of that or I'm going to live forever, basically.
Yes, that is how I think.
No, it's true. And to be honest, I don't have any plans for, like, getting old, because I don't imagine that I will. So
no,
I'm terrified of aging, but at the same time, I don't think I'm going to.
Mark gets annoyed at me because he always thinks, like, long-term, and he's like, I never go past the next year or two in my mind. And then Mark has said, like, go have the test because... If you're living your life like you're going to get it anyway. But I still don't think I'd change how I am. I'd just get upset more, or I'd worry more about Eleanor. And then I'd probably want Eleanor to have the test, because then I'd want to know whether I'd given it her. Like, and if you knew you weren't getting it, I think I'd have it.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I know that isn't how it works, but I always feel a bit like if I have the test and I'm getting it, then you're safe or you're not safe or...
Yeah.
I'm in denial. I definitely don't want to think about it or do anything about it.
Now Emily's walking with her brother along a woodland path.
If I have it, the likelihood is that it's already started to happen, because I think that you already have a deterioration in your brain a lot sooner than you notice that you have it. I do worry if I have any sort of symptom that is like cloudy brain or anything, like what's going on, this could be the start of it.
Trees reflected in a pond.
As much as we're siblings and we have shared experience, we're very, very different. He's got his choices to make, and I would not resent him whatever he chose to do. And then I'll have the same decision.
Emily walks alone through the trees. Then John approaches an imposing period building where he's meeting again with Professor Nick Fox.
Anyone in John's situation, the decision is often, should I or should I not know my gene status? But the knowledge about your genetic status is something you can't unknow.
The desire to have the test has kind of ebbed and flowed, because I've always kind of assumed that I do have the mutation, as I think maybe is quite a universal experience from what I've seen
from
the people that I've spoken to.
Do not double guess the gene. You know, absolutely do not decide that you know whether or not you've got your gene. Everybody says, I've been convinced I've had the gene for years. And I think that's a very sensible self protecting mechanism and managing expectations that we all do, in the same way that, you know, people often say, oh, I know I'm going to fail the exam or I'm whatever. The reality is when people do get a test and they find out that they're positive, they carry a mutation, they are shocked. The people who say, oh, well, I would give up my job, I would go around the world, I would... The reality is if they find they have a gene mutation, they don't. What they do is they live their normal lives, largely, hopefully savouring the moment more, but that's what we should be doing anyway. Your decision about whether or not to be tested, I believe this passionately, has to be based either because you can't cope with living with that uncertainty, but the only other reason, certainly in my experience of having seen many people in this process, is if it's going to change what you would otherwise do, what would you do differently?
So we were planning for quite a long time, because Matt is South African, we were wondering about going and living in South Africa for a little while. And I applied for my residence years and years ago, and it came through a few weeks ago. And so now that's an option. And there's a discussion we need to have, because that's why I'm now leaning again towards not knowing, because I do think life is short and we have to make the most of it.
Yeah, for sure. The statistics are that it's a minority of people. About 20% of people want to find out, want to have predictive testing.
But I think I understand it in the sense that it gives you some control.
It gives you knowledge. It's not entirely clear to me that it gives you control.
Well, no, I don't think it does give you control, which I think is probably why, whether I would necessarily choose to go down that path immediately unless there was something that I absolutely knew could be done.
Professor Nick smiles kindly.
It's complicated. It's complicated.
Outside, John stands amid the swaying trees with a far-off look in his eyes. The Dementia Research Centre at UCL is running an anti-amyloid drug trial for those at risk of genetic Alzheimer's. It's one of 141 drugs being trialled worldwide.
What we are doing is injecting an antibody, which is what your immune system normally produces against a foreign body or an infection. And that antibody targets amyloid. And if that antibody can mop it up, remove it from the brain, then the aim is lower the amyloid, will slow down the damage and change the rest of the disease. We started in 2012, and Carol just thought this was fantastic. These were anti-amyloid treatments that had come from her work at the beginning. She was my first patient in to that trial. So she was the first patient with genetic Alzheimer's disease that we gave one of those anti-amyloid therapies to. It's proved a very complex and long road to find treatments. Over that period, we have built on our knowledge. There's been so much progress, but there hasn't been a drug.
Footage of Carol at the research centre in 2012, then at home with Stuart.
Hello? A bit misty out there, isn't it, this morning?
He feeds her breakfast, then opens the window blinds.
I need to clear as much stuff as I can, because today Carol goes in for respite for 2 weeks. I need to sort out some books and photos to take with her so there's familiar things round about her in the room she's going to. So I just choose one or two photographs. It's a nice one with her with John. And look, that's a lovely one with John. I've got a memory book, which helps the staff as well. They can sit with Carol and take her through the memories. It's really our whole life together.
A photo of the couple at a concert.
Greater love hath no man than he takes his wife to a Cliff Richard concert. I'd rather go to Meatloaf or Genesis. I mean, there's a lot of good memories there. And when I focus on what we've had, that really is empowering. It gives you energy.
Carol is settled in an ambulance.
The thing that both encourages and hurts is those moments when you get a flash of Carol
as she was. And you're suddenly aware that the person, you know, that you loved and treasured is still there, but she hasn't gone.
Standing alone, Stuart watches the ambulance depart, then he heads back indoors. Towels and various items with Carol's name on are piled neatly in her room as Stuart closes the window blinds again. Then he puts some keys down on a side table.
I remember when we used to move home, I remember, because we used to do it quite often at one stage, seeing the van pull away with all your worldly possessions and thinking, that's the sum of my life there. But then standing there watching Carol go away, it's a large part of me they're taking.
Shadows fall across Carol's empty bed. Then it's almost 4 o'clock and Stuart's sitting in the study.
My caring isn't a sacrifice. It's a privilege.
Stuart swallows, his face etched with emotion for a moment. Then he puts on a smile. As Carol's bed stands empty, Stuart peers out through the blinds into the sunny street beyond. Arriving at her respite care home, Carol's wheeled along a corridor with a blanket over her knees. Then she's sitting in her room with her memory book on a table near the window and a photo of her with John beside the television. From tree branches laden with blossom, to Professor Sir John Hardy making a hot drink and Dr. Kath Mummery walking her dog.
It's 6 o'clock. Good morning. The headlines this morning. For the first time ever, a major trial has shown that a drug can slow the decline of the brain in Alzheimer's patients. The results have been heralded as...
This may be a defining moment in Alzheimer's research. After decades of failed trials, we now have the first treatment which appears to alter the underlying course of the disease.
The drug, lecanemab, only works in the early stages of the disease and it does have serious side effects, but scientists believe it could herald a new era of treatment.
Lecanemab works by clearing amyloid from the brain.
How excited should we be about this?
Well, Ben, it's rare that I use the term breakthrough, but I think it is merited today. The manufacturer says it could be on the market next year.
Dr. Mummery's with John.
Lecanemab is the first drug that's got formal approval, so full approval, which is
that's
unbelievable.
Amazing.
So it's the first time, in Alzheimer's disease. We have a disease-modifying therapy. We are in the treatment phase now. We are in the treatment era for Alzheimer's disease. Couldn't say that year ago. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
We have a drug. We have a drug!
So I feel more confident. I almost feel a little bit more at ease. Like, being here makes me think like I've actually... It actually makes me feel like I've got more time. It doesn't make me feel like I've got as much time as everybody else, necessarily, if I have the mutation, which obviously I don't know.
But it takes that pressure cooker off a bit.
It's taken some of that pressure off, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I can feel more relaxed about maybe not knowing my status just yet.
Where we are right now is so different from where we were a couple of years ago, right? And time is the thing that everybody in your situation, that's the only thing they care about, is give me some more time at a situation where I can enjoy it.
I mean, I knew that was going to happen. I knew that was going to happen eventually, but it's so great to see it actually happening.
I get goosebumps down the back of my neck. This is evidence that what we've been working towards all these years is actually finally coming to fruition. And it really does change things. It has a modest effect, this drug. It's not the magic bullet that's going to completely reverse the disease. But what it is the beginning. It's a foundation stone that we can build on and really make treatments that make a meaningful difference to their lives. And that's extraordinary. But what's even more extraordinary is that has all come from the work that Carol did with John Hardy and others to identify that first gene.
Tower blocks rising above trees and rooftops, then Carol having a hair washed as she lies in bed.
Let's get your hair washed as usual. My usual trick. Then again.
We had our research letter update talking about the new breakthrough, which has been quite
major in the news these last couple of days. After 20 years with no new drugs for Alzheimer's, we now have two potential new drugs in just 12 months. And for the first time, drugs seem to slow down the progression of the disease. This could be the beginning of the end of Alzheimer's disease. Too late for Carol, I'm afraid, but hopefully not Emily and John. I'm just glad that Carol has lived to see what's happening.
Beautiful, Carol.
This is what she's been working for 30 years. She'd have been over the moon had she been aware. It's a big day today. Coventry City Council are opening a new dementia hub for the city. So they're going to dedicate the lounge in her name today, so it'll be the official opening. They want one of us to get out.
A sign on the wall reads Carol Jennings Room.
So, hello everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today at the launch of this great new dementia hub. It's a terrible condition that affects so many in our world today. Carol is a vice president of the Alzheimer's Society and was key in helping scientists discover the familial Alzheimer's gene. For a person to have Alzheimer's or dementia in their families, to recognise that something may be genetic and then to influence researchers, I am just in awe of Carol, absolutely in awe.
Stuart smiles as the gathered crowd applaud Carol. Then Emily's talking while Eleanor feeds the ducks at a pond with John.
You always inherit good things and bad things from your parents. There's loads of things. There's loads of genes. You play the hand you dealt. I try to convince myself that if I am like mum in a certain way, that doesn't mean I have it. And when I think about new drugs and Alzheimer's breakthroughs, I just hope Eleanor's generation will have a different understanding of dementia, and I think Eleanor will be really proud of what her grandma achieved in her life and remember her also from who she was and the mum she was to me. So every time I give her a good piece of advice about eyebrows or just breathing in and out and dealing with grief, things like that, I want to pass that on and know that it was grandma who had taught me.
A plane taxis along the runway at Cape Town Airport. Then John and Matt are being greeted in arrivals.
Every time I hear about all the progress that's been made, I can link that back to that letter that Mum wrote, and I'm so proud of her for that. When the gene was discovered, she said, "It may not be any good for me, but I hope it will help my children," because she knew it would be the beginning of the end. I'm so optimistic for Eleanor's generation. Alzheimer's will be a thing of the past.
A line of colourful beach huts on the sand as waves roll in. On the 29th of March 2024, Carol Jennings died peacefully surrounded by her family. She donated her brain for further dementia research. With thanks to the Jennings family and UCH, UCL, and the National Brain Appeal.
Details of organisations offering information and support with dementia are available on the Action Line pages of the BBC website, or you can call free of charge at any time to hear recorded information on 08000 560 780.